Today's daf is Kaf Chet. We saw yesterday, we ended with this machloket between Rav and Debei Rav, which is really, it seems according to the, seems according to some of the Nuschaot, it's actually Debei Rebbe, which makes it a little simpler to compare between what Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav versus from the house of Rebbe. So let's just go back and quickly review. We saw that we started with the question, we're going to have a lot of ping-ponging. I made a chart. There's like two ways you could do a chart in this way, which is where does each one learn the halacha for a particular thing, or from what do they each darshan from each verse. So I opted to go with the chart and the verses, and it's how they each take each pasuk. Okay, so we have, if you look, it's sort of in the middle, a little toward the top of the page. It starts off with the case of the Mishnah, that a bechor needs to be eaten within its first year. Right, that's when we generally eat the bechor. We're going to talk about more about this later today to understand exactly what the cases of the Mishnah are discussing. So now they say, so the main thing they're starting with is, how do we count the years? We count the years based on the years of the animal itself, meaning, you know, it was born in September or in Nisan or whatever it is, right? We count from when it was born and not by a calendar year. So the first way we darshaned it was Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. It's from the pasuk of Nasham Lokecha Tochlenu Shana B'Shana. What is Shana B'Shana? And a year within a year, it's the year of the Bechor, which goes into, it overlaps two calendar years. That was Rav. Rebbe said, no, Shana B'Shana teaches you something else. Teaches you Shnei Yamin B'Layla Echad. That's how many days you can eat it for. Right. That's where we get it from, because it's eaten Shana B'Shana. It could be one. Right, you could potentially have it that it could be eaten. As if you, let's say, sacrifice it at the end of the year, then you'd, in theory, let's say you sacrifice it the last day of the year, you would eat it that day, and then you'd be able to eat it the following day also into the next year. So then they say, where does the Bei Rebbe learn the issue of how do we know that it goes by the year of that animal? He learns it from Kodshim, and Kodshim is learned from Keves ben Shnato, right? Because it says Shnato, so we learn it out from Kodshim. So then they say, where does Rav then get? In other words, we have to ping-pong back and forth. If Rebbe said that we learn from Shana B'Shana how long you can eat the Bechor for, where does Rav learn that from? So they learn it from U'Bsaram Yelecha Kechazat Shnufau Keshoke Yamin, which is just like the Korban Shlamim. The Bechor is like the Shlamim. Shlamim is eaten 2 days and a night. Therefore, it's also eaten 2 days and a night. But then the Gemara is going to question this. Okay, now we're up to the top of Kaf Chet. That's what we got to yesterday. So now they're going to say Idach. So now the other one, meaning Rebbe, why doesn't he learn 2 days and a night from Kodshim, right? From the Chazeh V'Shok. So, from the Shlamim. So they say, Ime hatam, ikalame mar chazev shok shel toda. You can eat it like the chazev shok, not necessarily of the Shlamim, but what's another type of Korban Shlamim? A toda is a type of Korban Shlamim, if you remember. It's got a unique law that you have to eat it within the first day, right? You have 1 day to eat it. You have a day and a night. You don't have, or a night and a day, you don't have 2 days and a night. So if you're going to say, we learn it from the chazet, right? Uvsaram yelcha ki chazet tnufau kashok hayamin of a korban shlamim. Well, there's two types of korban shlamim. So in theory, you could learn it from a toda, and that's why you need to learn it specifically from shana b'shana, meaning it can be eaten within 2 years because it could overlap right exactly at the border of the year. V'idach, so now, how is Rav, who said we can learn it from Upsaram Yelecha Kechazet Tufak Shokayamin, how does he know that it's going to be the longer option and not the shorter option of the Toda? Again, we have two options. Either it could be regular Shlamim, that can be eaten for 2 days, or it could be Korban Toda, which can only be eaten for one. So why does he say it's obvious to me we're going to learn it from Shlamim? Because Amar Kra Lecha Yehiyeh. Because it says Upsaram. Actually, it should be 1 second. Is it lecha yehiyeh? Because it's also yelecha. Because it says lecha yehiyeh, it should be, I think, Write it there. I just want to check one thing. Right, it's lecha yihyeh. Later they're going to say it's yihyeh lecha, but that's the mistake. No, b'saram yihyeh lecha. What's it? Wait, I'm confused again. Where's the pasuk? U'b'saram yihyeh lecha. That's why. It says it twice in the pasuk. Here's the pasuk. U'b'saram yihyeh lach kechazeu tshifa k'shok ha'yamin lecha yihyeh. Okay, it says it twice in that pasuk. That's why it... Okay, so now they say, because it says lecha yihyeh, what does that teach you? Hosif lecha katuv havaya acheret. This should be for you, meaning you get it extra. Because there's the extra words of lecha yihyeh, or yihyeh lecha, in other words, because it's repeated, therefore it's obvious that they're giving you extra time to eat it rather than less time to eat it. And that's why it's obvious we're going to learn it from the Korban Shlamim and not from the Torah. V'idach, so now... We question back to the Rebbe, who said, you know, you could have learned it from the Todeh, but how could you learn it from the Todeh? It says lecha yihyeh. So what does he say? Ha mehatam ika lemeimer ha yihyeh lecha limein al b'chor ba'amum shenotno lekohen shelo matzinu lo b'chol ha-Torah kula. Now he points out that something we've been learning is obvious. Okay, what is obvious that we've been learning anyway? That a bechor goes to the Kohen. Remember, what does the Kohen do with it? He sacrifices it. But if it gets a mum, what happens? He also gives it to the Kohen, just the Kohen doesn't have to sacrifice it. So now they're going to point out that it never says in the Torah that if it has a mum, it goes to the Kohen. So when it says, kechazeh tufa u'kashok ha'imin, right, u'v'saram yiyeh lecha kechazeh tufa u'kashok ha'imin, lecha yiyeh, what's it teaching you? Because it says it double, what is it telling you? Even if it's a Baal Mum, it also goes to you. Okay? And therefore, the Lecha Yiyeh, or the Yeh Lecha, is not extra to teach you how many days. It's to teach you that the Kohen gets it, even if it's a Baal Mum. V'idach, so now, if Rav is using this to teach you that it's teaching you that it's the 2 days and not the 1 day, then where does he learn about a Baal Mum that goes to the Kohen also? V'idach amar uv'saram. Notice it says uv'saram yihyeh lecha. Right, the meat should be for you, the Kohen. So why b'saram? B'saram is plural. What does that teach you? Echad tam ve'echad balmum. The rabim of b'saram, because really it should say, and the basar should be to you, because it's the basar of a bechor. So because it says b'saram, that teaches you whether it's a perfect animal or whether it's blemished. V'idach, so now back to the person, right, back to Rebbe, who thought that it wasn't teaching that, right, that, in other words, that the word lecha yihyeh was already teaching, or yihyeh lecha was teaching it. What does he do with the word b'saram? V'idach, we're at the end here, u'b'saram dahane b'chorot ekulu Yisrael kamar. This is a classic answer. It says b'rabim, even though it's talking about a specific animal is going to the Kohen, because it means all the b'chorim that there are in existence. Okay, it's saying basically, right, the Bechor, all Bechors, the Besaram of all Bechors go to the Kohen. And therefore it's Berabim, it's in plural for that reason and not for any other reason. Okay, so that was the whole ping pong of how they each learned. And we started off with, how do you know, right, the whole question, just to review our basic question was, how do we know that we count based on the animal's personal birthday? We talk about the year. So Rav learns it from Lifnei Hashem Elokecha Tochlenu Shana B'Shana, and Rebbe learns it from Kodshim, which is learned out from Keves Ben Shnato. So it's just like another korbanot, likewise here. Okay, now we're going to have to understand this halacha better of the year. So I want to look back at the Mishnah and just read it first, and you'll see there's a little bit of a lack of clarity in the Mishnah. So if you look at the end of the Mishnah, it says... Habechor ne'echal shana b'shana. Okay, this is 3 lines from the bottom of the Mishnah on Kaf Vav Amud Bet. Habechor, right, the Bechor is eaten shana b'shana, which means within its first year. Bein tam bein baal mum. Shene'emar lefnei Hashem lokecha tachlenu shana b'shana. Okay, the Bechor is eaten within the first year, whether it's a tam or whether it's a baal mum. Nolad lo mum b'toch shnato, if it gets a mum within its first year, Rashai l'kaimo kol shnei masar chodesh. Okay, then there's a bit of a nosach issue, and they say la'achar shnato eino rashai l'kaimo ela lamed yom. But if it gets a mum after its year, you can only keep it for 30 days. Now it's a little strange. Didn't we just say it has to be within the first year? So there's something not exactly clear about what's going on here. It seems to say you have to eat it within the first year, but then all of a sudden they're giving you, they say if it gets a mum within the second year, or, right, it says, it's actually, like I said, there's a bit of a nusach problem, but assuming that it says, if it gets it after its first year, then you can only keep it for 30 days. So it's a little strange what exactly is going on here. So we're going to read now the Gemara's question to try to understand this, and then we'll clarify exactly what's going on here. Ibai lehu. Hechi ka'amar nolad lo b'toch shnato rashai l'kaimo kol yubechodesh, ula achar shnato nami shloshim. Does it mean that if it gets a mum within its first year, you can keep it for 12 months plus an additional 30 days? It's like if you look at a recipe and it tells you sometimes 2 cups and 3 tablespoons, right? You always think those are like weird recipes you have, or you have like a whole 2 cups and then all of a sudden you get like an extra little 2 tablespoons of whatever ingredient. So here, it's saying you get the whole year plus another 30 days. That's what they're suggesting maybe the Mishnah means, even though it doesn't really sound like that's the pshat of the Mishnah. But again, you could see there were some nusach issues in the Mishnah. So is it telling you can keep it for 12 months plus you get an additional 30 days? O dilma, or does it mean hecha din ola b'mum b'toch shnato? It's giving you 2 possibilities. If it gets a mum within its first year, rashai l'kaimo kol shneim asar chodesh, v'tu lo, and no more than that. But if it gets a mum after its first year, eino rashai l'kaimo ela shloshim, then you can only keep it 30 days, for another 30 days. So the issue is here like this. It sounded from the Mishnah that everything has to be dealt with within the first year. That's what it sounded like. Whether it's a tam, whether it's a baal mum, you have a whole year. Not really anymore. So how could it start giving this case, nafal baal mum, after you get another 30 days, according to the second possibility? So you have to remember, in the time of the Mikdash, there really wasn't such a possibility, because in the time of the Mikdash, either it was a tam, in which case it had to be sacrificed within its first year, or it got a mum within its first year, in which case you had to eat it within the first year. But once there's no longer a Mikdash, and you don't bring it, then what happens? You have to wait. If it's a tam, you can't deal with it within its first year because you can't do anything with it. You can only shecht it once it gets a mum. So you have to wait in that case. So you have 3 possibilities, right? You have the 2 possibilities in the time of the Mikdash. Either it's a tam, you sacrifice right away, or it's a baal mum. And then again, everything has to happen within the first year. When there's no Mikdash, if it gets a mum within its first year, then it has to be within the first year. If it gets a mum, it doesn't have a mum yet, then you can't do anything with it within its first year. So then you wait till it gets a mum. As soon as it gets a mum, then what happens? According to this possibility, you would have 30 days in which to eat it. Okay? So that's the second possibility. So again, the first possibility is maybe it just means that in any case it gets a mum within the first year, you have a year plus 30. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Tashma, let's try to learn it from here. So they're going to give one answer, they're going to reject it, and then they're going to give a second answer. Ditanya, the Braita says, Bichur bazman hazeh, ad shelo nir'eh, laharoto l'chacham, meaning, if a bichur nowadays, until, ad shelo nir'eh laharoto l'chacham, means, before it's ra'oi, it's worthy of being shown to a chacham, which really means, it sounds like a good thing, but it's really a bad thing. It means until it gets a mum, although one could say it's a good thing because otherwise you have nothing to do with it. So in other words, it being blemished is actually a blessing for you, because if you're the Kohen, you want to actually eat it. So that's why, in a sense, they're wording it in the positive. Until it becomes worthy of showing to a chacham, Roshai l'kaimo shtayim v'shalosh shanim. Oh, this is what I said before, right? That when there's bazman hazeh, you have no choice, right? You have to wait 2 or 3 years. Umishenir el haroto l'chacham. Now, and then from the time that it potentially, right, has a blemish, nolam b'mum b'toch shnato. So now there's 2 possibilities. Once it does get blemished, So either it's going to be Nolalamun b'toch shnato, and then Rashai l'kaimo kol shneim asar chodesh achar shnato. I'm sorry. And Rashai l'kaimo kol shneim asar chodesh. So now it's giving you and this braita two possibilities. If it gets a mum within the first year, you can leave this animal only until the end of the first year. Achar shnato, but if it gets a mum after, then what happens? Eino rashai l'kaimo afilu yom echad. Oh, this doesn't match what we said, right? We said you get 30 days. So now it says you can't leave it even yom echad. Okay? Afilu sha'achad. You have to sacrifice it immediately. Aval mipnei hashavat aveda lebaalim amru rashai l'kaimo shloshim yom. What does that mean? It means that theoretically it could be that you haven't given this bechor yet to a kohen. Let's say it's past its first year. It's not blemished yet, so you never gave it to the kohen. It's not like the kohen can do anything with it if it doesn't have a blemish. So you just didn't get around to giving it to the kohen. All of a sudden it gets a mum. What does the halacha say? You don't even have an hour. You have to sacrifice it right away. Now let's say you don't know any kohen. You can't find one. You're stuck. In that case, it's going to be a loss for the kohen. Because you have to shecht it right away. In those days, there were no freezers, refrigerators. It was going to be a loss for the Kohanim. Because of the potential loss for the Kohanim, we say you have 30 days. Okay, so now we learn that according to this source anyway, the 30 days is not the basic halacha, right? The real halacha is immediately, but we allow these extra 30 days. In any case, according to this, what do we conclude? That when the Mishnah said you get an extra 30 days, it didn't mean if it happens within its first year, you get 12 months plus 30 days. No, it meant, depending on when the mum happened, that would affect how many days you have. So if the mum happens after, the animal becomes blemished after the first year, then you only have 30 days. But within the first year, you have the whole year. So now the Gemara is going to say, but we're going to reject this. Because adayin tibayli shloshim yom achar shnato, odilma kodem shnato. So now they say, still, are the 30 days, 1 second, I could still say 30 days, a harsh, is it meaning, you could still read this braita as saying the following. It says in the braita, nola bumum, b'toch shnato, rashai l'kaimo kol shneim asar chodesh, achar shnato eino rashai l'kaimo afilu yom echad. But then they gave him an extra 30 days. So potentially, it's not exactly the pshat, but one could understand that what this means is, even if the mum happened, and it doesn't say, no la b'mum achar shnato, it just says, achar shnato. Achar shnato could technically mean, even after the year passes, you still have potentially 30 days in order not to create a loss for the kohen. Exactly the pshat, but they say it's not conclusive. So then they bring their second answer. Tashma, let's look at this source. Nola b'mum b'chamisha sar yom b'toch shnato. If you get a mum, now it sounds like 15 days into the year. What they really mean is 15 days before the end of the year. Mashlimim lo chamisha sar yom achar shnato. Now this becomes clear, because what could this basically means, so what does it mean? It means you get 15 days in this year and 15 days in the next year, meaning you only have 30 days. You get to go into the next year. But what's obvious now? If you get a mum within the first year, the first possibility is rejected. We wanted to say maybe it means you get 12 months and 30 days. It's obvious from here you don't get 30 days past the 12 months, because in this case you only get 30 days from the day you got the mum. Okay, so therefore it must be the second possibility, that if you were to get a mum within the second year or the third year, you'd only have 30 days. Okay, now the Gemara is going to say, Misayele Rabbi Elazar. This source supports what the Amora Rabbi Elazar said. Tamar Rabbi Elazar, Notnim lo shloshim yom misha'ashan ola bomum. He says, right, once you get a mum, you get 30 days. So that seems to match exactly what this source just said. But Ika de Amre, some people have this whole section read differently, a different version of it. It started with Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar actually didn't say what we just said he said, but according to this version, Rabbi Elazar said something different. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Minayin lebechor shenola b'mum b'toch shnato, shenotnim lo shloshim yom achar shnato. The Dafka Rabbi Elazar said, option number one of our original question, which is, how do we know that if it gets a moon within its first year, you get up to the end of the year plus an additional 30 days? Shene'emar, lifnei Hashem Elokecha tochlenu shana b'shana. Because it says, lifnei Hashem Elokecha tochlenu shana b'shana, what does that mean? Shana, it sounds like, and another year. Now, Ezo hein yamim achashuvim shana, heve omer elu shloshim yom. What's the smallest amount of time we could call a year? 30 days. What on earth does that mean? Yeah. Who would call a year 30 days? Well, we have to go all the way back to Rosh Hashanah. When we learned about Rosh Hashanah, there's all these years that we count the years for different things, different times of the year. So let's say you have a case of orla. You plant a tree. If it's 30 days before the orla year starts, that already counts as your first year of orla. So for, if you remember, also the kings, right? Like you could actually be king for a year and a month, let's say, but be considered 2 years king already. So that there could be potentially, you could count 30, it needs a minimum in order to be considered a year, but that's already a counting of a year. So shana b'shana means a year plus another 30 days. I keep having in my head the, you know, when you get a bill and you get to pay, you know, you have like 30 days. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that kind of thing. We're giving you like an extra grace period. Even though it seems strange, like a year should be enough time, not so clear why you would need a grace period. Anyway, according to this version, Rabbi Elazar answers that that's in fact the way he read it. And then, as a result, we're going to bring now our Braita that said the opposite of that, right, that didn't agree with that, as a question against Rabbi Elazar. Meitive, so now we're going to say, Rabbi Elazar, we have a question against what you said from a Braita. Nola b'mum b'chamishasar yom b'toch shnato mashlimim lo chamishasar yom achar shnato, which means hashlama in mihava lo. Right? It means only you can go into the next year to finish your 30 days, but not to get a full 30 days. So, tiyuvta to Rabbi Elazar, tiyuvta. So they say, in fact, according to that version of Rabbi Elazar, it actually, he's left with, you know, a question against him. Okay, next case. Hashochet et habachor umar'eh et mumo. Someone shechs the bachor, and he shows, now what happens? He shechs the bachor, it has a mum, but it, or, right, we assume it has a mum, but he didn't show it to a chacham. And then he shechs it first, knowing it's blemished, but only after he shows it to a chacham. Rabbi Yehuda matir, okay, Rabbi Yehuda says, no problem, as long as the chacham determines at this point, even after the shechita, that there's a mum, that's sufficient. Rabbi Meir omer, ho'il v'nishchat shelo al pi mumche asur. Since it was slaughtered not by a mumche, by an expert, meaning no one determined yet, right? A mum isn't a mum until, we saw this the other day, until an expert determines it's a mum. Since this was slaughtered without the mumche determining it was a mum, asur, this meat is forbidden. Mi she'eino mumche v'ro'e t'abachor v'nishchat al piv, harei ze yikaver v'yishalei mibeto. Let's say I go, I'm not an expert in mumim, but I tell you, that's a blemish. Okay? Now, I've basically fooled you into thinking that I can determine that this is a blemish. Although, maybe, right, the question is, you might think, who's the responsibility? Maybe the responsibility is on the owner to figure out, you know, to make sure who's an expert, who's not. But interestingly enough, they say, no. If I'm not a mumche and I determine that it's got a mum, and then you slaughter it based on what I said, Hareza yikaver, the animal is forbidden, bahana'ah, it's forbidden everything, right? It wasn't, because remember, as long as the mumche doesn't determine it's a blemish, that animal is asur bahana'ah. You can't do anything with it.
Even one that's very obvious.
Yeah, that's what they're saying here. B'yishalem mibeto. And I would have to pay you back from my money the loss that I caused you. Okay? The financial loss. So now we're going to have a bit of a debate about what exactly, what type of blemish, and this goes back to your question, Naomi, what if it's obvious, totally obvious, or not necessarily that it's obvious, they're going to ask a different question, okay, that's not the Gemara's question, but the Gemara's going to say, okay, what if there's a, okay, we're going to actually ask about Rabbi Yehuda, who matirs. What's the issue? Well, things could look different after the animal's dead, so therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, if the chacham comes or the mumche comes after and determines it's a mum, well, what if he determines it's a mum, but that mum changed, right? The mum happened as a result of the death. What type of, well, so that's what they're going to talk about here. So, Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Bidugin Sheba'ayin, Dekule Amalo Pligi De'aser, Mipnei Shehein Mishtanim. There's, right, it's this problem with the eye, we've talked about it, there's a blemish in the eye. That's something that changes in death, as Aviva said, wouldn't the Mumche know? That's something that obviously changes in death, and therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's forbidden if the Chacham is Koveh after death, because that doesn't mean anything. Lo nechleku ela b'mumim shabaguf. The real debate is about mumim not in the eye, but on other parts of the body. To Rabbi Meir Savar, Gazrina mumim shabaguf atu dukin shabayin. Now we're going to see that Rabbi Meir's answer is a little different than what we thought. It's because he says, since the case of dukin shabayin will be forbidden, there, right, because things will change, even in a case where we know it didn't change in death, we're still going, like let's say it had a broken leg or something, right? We're still going to forbid it because we might come to matir dukin shabayin case. We assume dukin shabayin is just an example of something that would change. Rabbi Yehuda Savar lo gazrina mumim shabaguf atu dukin shabayin, right? The mumcha can know, exactly as Aviva said, which one is going to change in death and which one won't change, and therefore there's no reason to make a gzera. Tanya Namihachi, we have a bright also to support this. What are we supporting? Rabba Bar Bar Chana's understanding of the Mishnah that they would both agree that it's forbidden in a case of dukin shabayin. Hashochet et habachor umar ed mumav. Okay, so this was an Amora who said it, and now we're going to bring a Braita to support his reading. If you shech the Bechor and you show the mum to the expert after the death, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bedukin Shabayin Asur Mipnei Shehem Mishtanim, B'mum Shabaguf Mutar Mipnei Shehem Mishtanim. So there you have it explicitly. The Rabbi Yehuda says, it depends which type of a mum it is. Rabbi Meir Omer, Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Asur Mipnei Shehem Mishtanim. Okay, so now. Now they say, Mipnei Shehem Mishtanim, Salkada Tach Mumim Shabaguf Mi Mishtanim. What do you mean, Mipnei Shehem Mishtanim? It sounded like he was saying, because they change, but we just said they don't necessarily, right? We know that Mumim Shabaguf don't necessarily change. So he says, Elam Mipnei Ham Mishtanim, because there are some that change, therefore we're going to forbid them all. Amar of Nachman Amar Bar Yitzchak. Matniti, now he's going to support Rabbi Hanif reading from the Mishnah itself. He's now going to say, so we keep, right, we're not having dissenting opinions here, we're just trying to find further proofs for him. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ho'il v'nishchat shelo api mumche asur. Right? Rabbi Meir says, since it was nishchat shelo api mumche asur, it sounds like, what's he saying? Shmamina knasa kakanis Rabbi Meir shmamina. It sounds like it's just a knas, not that it's actually forbidden, but that the rabbis instituted a penalty for those who did it. And therefore, right, since, because listen to his wording. He says, since you didn't show it to a mumche, right, you kind of did, you shouldn't have done it in that way, sounds like we're penalizing you, which means if we're penalizing you, it means it's not because it actually would be different, like the dukin shabayin case, which means the Mishnah is clearly not talking about a dukin shabayin case, because that case they would both agree with, shma mina. Ibai elihu. Now they're going to ask a question. Mipnei ha-mishtanim, v'kulu mishtane, o dilma, ika de mishtane, v'ika de lo mishtane. So now we're saying, are all dukin shabayim, when we say mipnei ha-mishtanim, which we said was dukin shabayim, do we assume all eye blemishes change? Or maybe some change in death, and some actually could have been before death and wouldn't change during death, or as a result of death. So now they say, l'maynach gemina, what's the relevance? Because if you see a blemish in the eye after death, it's not like you knew whether it was there before or whether, you know, whether it wasn't, so it's not going to really make a difference. So what do they answer? L'kushe sade. It's to say that we can, if witnesses come along, can we assume that they're lying or can we assume that they're telling the truth? I amart kulu mishtane, if they said that, if we hold that all dukin shabayin change, and witnesses came and said, we saw before death that it looked exactly like this, then what do we know? Shakri ninu, we know that these are false witnesses, which would mean, right, number one, well, first of all, Right? Even if we say that Dugin Shabayan is going to be a problem, the question is, if we determine these witnesses are liars, then we won't accept them in other testimonies. We're going to put them on the blacklist. These witnesses can never testify. But if we say some could potentially be there and some could potentially change, then samchin on alayhu. Then we can rely on these witnesses. And then, again, if you're a Rabbi Meir, so you're not going to rely on them anyway, but you can rely on them in other cases. And if you're Rabbi Yehuda, then you can rely on them for this case and basically matir the animal. My, so what's the case? What's the situation? Can Duk and Shabayan change sometimes? You know, can there be ones that don't change in death? Tashma, let's learn from this source. Da'amar Rabba Barbar Chana, Sachli Rabbi Yoshaya de Min Usha. Rabbi Yoshaya from Usha told me, Bo ve'er'ech bedukin shehem mishtanim. Says, come, I want to show you some cases of a Dukin Shabayin that changed in death. So now, what does it sound like? Midika amarle bova ereka. Come and I'll show you. Michlal di ika de mishtani, di ika de lo mishtani. It sounds like he's trying to say, I'm going to show you this is a type of blemish in the eye that's going to change, but means there's others that don't change. Here comes a very interesting situation where somebody, like we said, some random person determines it's a mum. The person slaughtered it, so he now has to pay. So they say, we must assume that what? This opinion must be holding like Rabbi Meir. Why? Because he's saying, if you shechted it, right? I determine there's a blemish, but I'm not a chacham to determine there's a blemish. Then we shecht it, and then it could even be in a case where we show it to a chacham, the chacham says there's a blemish, still I'm going to be penalized and still the animal is going to have to be buried because, why? It must be Rabbi Meir. It must be that the Mishnah, right, even though it brought a machloket in the beginning, this part seems to follow Rabbi Meir. But the Gemara says, no, you could also explain according to Rabbi Yehuda how. Dilma b'dukin shaba'ayim v'divrei akol. We already said that Rabbi Yehuda agrees even in the case of dukin shaba'ayim. So it could be that it was a case of dukin shaba'ayim that even though chacham determined after death, right, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it would be aster because that might change in death. Okay. Tana. Now the question is, how much do I have to pay you? You would assume what from the Mishnah? What does it sound like? I have to pay you the full amount of the loss of the animal. But now we're going to learn not necessarily or not at all. Kishahu mishalem, mishalem revia ledaka, umechtze legasa. I pay a quarter of the value of the animal for a small animal and half for a large animal. My taima, what's the reason? Amarab, well, what they're now talking about is why is there a difference between a daka and a gasa? Amarab, papa, zehef se merube, vizehef se muat. Okay, the daka is a hefsed muat, and therefore I only pay a quarter. And the big animal is hefsed merube. So then they say, that doesn't make any sense. In other words, you shouldn't be proportioned a quarter or a half. It should just be a large amount, a smaller amount. So Amar Afuna Bar Manoch, Mishmei Dorava Chabarika, Mishum Gzera Migale Behema Daka Naguba. The reason why you pay a different amount for a daka and for a gasa is because, now this is a very interesting thing, we learned this a long time ago, which is a behema daka, you're not allowed to be megadel ba'eretz Yisrael. Why is that? Because behemot dakot eat in other people's fields, and therefore they're going to destroy the land, and therefore we don't want you to have a lot of these animals around. They also graze in other people's fields. So because of that, they want to penalize the owner for having a behema daka, so he's only going to get half the amount that you get for behema gasa. Okay? According to that interpretation, it's only going to be in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz La'aretz, because there's no Isser in Chutz La'aretz. Another option is because they need, 1 second, because a behema daka needs a lot more attention than a behema gasa. A behema daka, I guess, is smaller, needs more. I don't know exactly why it needs more, but apparently it needs more attention. And because it needs more attention on the part of the owner, it was actually, you're helping the Kohen by not giving it to him, because if you had given it to the Kohen, he would have had to deal with it and pay money for it. So therefore, you know, especially if it was before it had a mum, he'd have to keep it till it gets a mum. So in that sense, you're actually saving him by having slaughtered it right now, because he would have had all these expenses. So because of those expenses that you're saving him, you actually have to pay less. Okay? But it, the Gemara didn't answer, and this is an important question, as to why you only pay a quarter or a half. And that's, once we get to a half, we can see why you pay a quarter for a dakah. That the Gemara answered. But why are you only paying half? So the Mefarshim say that this is based on sumchus. What does sumchus say? Very famous. We saw this back in the Babas. That mamona mutaba safek, cholkin. We split it 50-50. Why is this mamona mutaba safek? Because on the one hand, you should have gone to a mumche to be matir, right? And instead, you prevented him from going to a mumche to matir, so you should, in theory, be paying nezek shaveh. On the other hand, maybe it really had a mum. And maybe it would have died. Let's say it had a mum. Okay, and it was a good mum. And maybe before the kohen shechs it, it might have died. If it dies on its own, the kohen wouldn't have been allowed to eat it. So therefore, it could have been that the kohen would never have gotten this animal in any case. So it's not like you prevented him from eating an animal 100%. What I wanted to say is the opposite. It could be right now, there's two options when I said it had a mum. Either it really had a mum, in which case I'm causing you a loss because could have slaughtered it. With the mum, you could have just brought it to a chacham and it would have matir. Or maybe it didn't have a mum. If it didn't have a mum, then it could be it would die before it ever got a mum. That's what I wanted to say. So if it had died before it got a mum, he would never, right? Cohen would never be able to eat it. So theoretically, you could claim, I didn't necessarily cause him a loss. And therefore, it's 50-50. Okay, and that's why you only pay half. And then from the half, you get down to the quarter, the Gemara explained. Since we're already talking about this, we get into this very important discussion the Mishnah brings up. Let's say you're a judge, and this is a person who wasn't a judge and made a mistake. Well, you know, or not that he made a mistake, it's just he wasn't able to determine there was a mum because he wasn't an expert. What if you have a judge who makes a mistake in court? Dana Tadin, Zikat HaChayab, B'chiyevet HaZakai, Timeet HaTahor V'tiheret HaTameh. Okay, so you're in judgment. You said someone's zocheh, and really they should have been chayav. Or you said someone's chayav, and they really should have been zakai. Right, you obligated someone who was. Or you said this was impure when it was really pure. Or you said it was pure when it was really impure. Masha asa asui, you can't reverse the judgment. B'yishalei mibeto. Meaning if I made you pay somebody else money, I can't make that person give you the money back. But I have to pay you the money out of pocket. That's my responsibility as a judge. Which seems very difficult because then a judge is going to always be right. So now the Gemara says, "V'im hayah mumche lebeitin patur mi l'shalem." But if he was an expert, okay, here it says lebeitin. If you see there's a little gimel, which sends it to Masoret HaShas, who says that the Rosh's gear says, "Mumche l'rabim." Okay, you were mumche for many people. Like there's different levels of judges. So there's expert judges, just like we have a mumche here for blemishes. There's, you know, any three people in theory could judge, could get together and become a beitin. But if you're an expert, then, okay, obviously you have to determine what makes someone a regular judge and an expert judge. But if you're an expert, then you're exempt from paying.
Is it not like in the regular courts, but the mumchim are not judges? They're like expert witnesses or something like that.
Ah, right, like so, in a court, you might say...
Right, the expert is somebody else who comes in and gives an opinion.
Ah, yafe. So the expert would be someone who gave an opinion, except here we're talking about an expert in judgments. Mm-hmm. We're talking about someone who's... You know, I was thinking maybe, you know, a small court versus the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. or, you know, one of the bigger courts. Then a bigger court, so that the people who get to the bigger court, they're the real experts. The smaller courts, right, we're always appealing things from small courts, because... Judges make mistakes. They see things, you know, one way. So I think it could be something like that. Right? In those days, they had the courts of 3 and the courts of 23 and the courts of 71. So it could be there's a distinction there depending on which court. Okay. So now, Le Matnan Stama Ki Rabbi Meir, Dedain Dina Degarme. So it sounds like, just like they said before about the Mishnah, it sounds like the Stam Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, who says... that there is Dina Degarme. Okay, what's Dina Degarme? We've seen this before. There's two basic interpretations. Some say it's the same as grama. Garme and grama are the same thing. Okay, often things end with an aleph or a yud. It's not a big difference, which means it's indirect damages. And here we see you're chayav for indirect damages, right? Except for the case of a mumche, who's an exception. But generally, you're chayav for indirect damages, right? It's indirect damages because you didn't intend to damage anybody. You didn't intend to do something wrong. But based on your judgment, you caused indirect damages. Some people say that there's a difference between garme and grama. Okay, particularly the Ramban has an entire book on Dina de Garme, and he talks about all the small, minute distinctions between garma and garme. Okay, I was thinking about it. He wrote this whole book on it, and there were those people who say there's actually no difference. Right. Think about it. You wrote an entire book on something that some people disagree and think there's actually nothing to your book at all. What's the difference? So the differences would be the basic, again, I can't summarize the his entire, but the basic differences that people say is that garme is more direct. Here, by your words, you caused someone to pay when they didn't need to pay. That's different from you doing something that eventually, right, so either it's you actually did an action, more direct action, even though it caused direct damages indirectly, but it was a direct action that then, from that direct action, the damages were caused. Or it was also immediate. You did something immediately, whereas grama would be something that over time kind of eventually caused something to happen. I always think of the Rube Goldberg, those things that cause other things to happen. That would be classic grama. So Rabbi Meir says there's a debate about whether you're chayav for this or not. Rabbi Meir says you're chayav, and therefore we're assuming the Mishnah must be according to Rabbi Meir. But now they say no. Generally, when the Gemara introduces something with a lema, they're going to reject it. Amar Rabbi Ila, Amar Rav, kegon shenasav enatam bayad. It's a case where you actually physically took the money out of one guy's hand and gave it to the other guy. You went over, you said, you owe that person money, you took it yourself and you paid it to the other guy. That's the case that we're going to talk about in the Mishnah. Okay? In which case, it's not garme anymore, it's not indirect, it's direct. So now they're going to say, how could that be? In other words, bishlamach yevet hazakai. I understand if you took someone who was exempt and you made him pay and you actually took the money and you passed it. You could have a case of that. If you said you're exempt, well, really you're chayav, so no money changed hands. So how could you say it's a case of nasav natan bayad? So hechidami. So ida amarle paturata v'halo nasav natan bayad. Right. This is the question. Right. This is what I just said. If you're going to say you're exempt, so then obviously no money changed hands. You couldn't have done it even by yourself. So amaravina. Kegon shahayalo mashkon unitalo hemenu. Okay, you loan someone money, right? Then you took a mashkon, and then they said, oh, well, the lova actually doesn't have to give you back the money. So what you have to do, you had to give him back his collateral, in which case the dayan took the collateral physically from you and gave it back to the borrower. So that would be a case. Okay, timei tatahor, so what would be a case? Now we're going to come up with creative solutions. If you say something that was pure is impure, again, how could you do that biyad? Da'aga behu sheretz. It's a case where the dayan was so confident in what he said that what did he do? He said, this is tamei, and to prove it, I'm going to throw a sheretz on it. So if you didn't think it was tamei, you weren't convinced, now I'm making a tamei. In that case, he caused the damage directly, right? To say that these are all the cases in the Mishnah is quite a jump. What would be that case? If you said something is tahor when really it was impure, she'irvan in perotav. So I'm so convinced it's tahor that I'm going to throw this into your batch of other perot, mix it up, and you'll never know which is which. And then it ended up being tameh, and then it was metame, everything else. So those are potential cases. Okay, we're going to stop here for today. I was hoping to finish a little more, but we'll get to now a case that actually happened where Rabbi Tarfo made a mistake, and we'll see what they say about it.